say, ooh, baby, baby, maybe we're just two little birds in a tree. And if our wings are working, we better jump off this branch and see. Hey, this one isn't up to me. Oh, no, this one isn't up to me.
Welcome to this episode of Birds in a Tree. My name is Bridget Manley, and I'm your host. This episode of Birds in a Tree is really interesting for a variety of reasons. My guest today is Carlo. Carlo and I have known each other going on 3 decades, which dates us both. And Carlo and his wife, Amanda, have 2 daughters. And Carlo is a stepfather to one of those daughters. He met Amanda in high school, but then they reconnected later, well after college. And Amanda had already had a daughter. So he came in to this relationship and became a stepfather and experienced a lot of those growing pains that we've heard about on other episodes of this show. And Carlo is also really interesting because he built a business from the ground up. He was really interested in photography in high school and college, but got into it after college when he was given a really nice camera. And after practicing and practicing and getting really well known as a spectacular photographer, he was asked to do a wedding. Did it, loved it, and then built his business from there. I'm proud to say that my husband and I were one of his first clients. And since then, he's photographed thousands of weddings in the Mid-Atlantic area. He's phenomenal. And so it makes Carlo's news that he has in this episode even more interesting. You have to make career decisions based on your family. And that's what Carlo's doing. So I'll let him explain. It's really interesting. And then finally, on an incredibly sad note, between the time when we taped this episode and when it aired, Carlo's beloved stepfather, Michael Goodfellow, passed away unexpectedly. And he's referenced a few times in this episode, not only for being such a great example of what a stepfather can be in a child's life and giving Carlo the maturity to blend families and to do so with grace and dignity and keeping the child in mind, but also for his business sense and teaching Carlo how to build a business and run a business and, you know, check his accounting and do all of those things that you have to do when you're building a successful business. And Carlo recently shared on Facebook some of his thoughts about his stepfather that he also read at his funeral. And with permission, I would like to read one small part of that. Carlo says, quote, "It took many years after he and my mom married for me to call him dad. He never pressured me or expected me to. When the time was right, it just came out. Hey, dad, all we knew was that I was comfortable and that it made me feel good. And from what I could tell by the smile on his face and in his eyes, it made him feel good too." So on this Memorial Day weekend, we dedicate this episode to Captain Mike, Michael P. Goodfellow. This is Carlo's story. Carlo, thank you so much for joining me and agreeing to talk to me about your family and how it all kind of happened. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have a 13-year-old daughter and you have a 2-year-old daughter. Your 13-year-old daughter is your stepdaughter, right?
That's correct.
Uh-huh. So when you met your wife, like, and I love your love story. It is one of my favorites. You have always sort of been crushing on her. You guys knew each other. We all sort of knew each other from like middle school, high school, and you have loved her from afar for a very long time, right?
Yes, I have. It's funny. Amanda and I worked together at the Silver Tree Restaurant back in the day. It was my first job. I was 14 years old. She was a senior in high school. I was a freshman, and she was just one of those older girls that couldn't take your eyes off of.
Right? Like, she was so hot.
Yeah. And it was like the late 90s, or what was it? I guess it was like the mid 90s. So she had the big hair going on and all that type of stuff. And I loved it.
That's awesome. And so you guys sort of reconnected later on in life. You know, you had gone to school, graduated, done all that stuff, and sort of came back home and met up at a bar, right?
Yeah. I met my wife at a bar. It was pretty awesome. I was on one side. It was a, you know, night spot up in Deep Creek, my hometown. And I looked across the bar there and I saw her and I remembered her instantly. And I ordered a shot of whiskey and I asked her to dance. We exchanged numbers and the rest is history.
I love it. And so when did you find out that she had a daughter?
Wow.
I know. I'm just diving in.
That was it was one of those things that she didn't tell me on the first date.
Mm-hmm.
She told me on the second date.
Okay. So was it like, by the way, like we're kind of connecting, I feel like you should know this, or did it just come out in conversation?
Yeah. I mean, the first date was, it was one of those things where it was first date. So we weren't really diving headfirst into anything. We were just kind of meeting up almost for the first time in a non-public situation. You know, we're just kind of feeling things out and getting to know each other and, you know, just light casual conversation. Mm-hmm. The second date, we laid everything out. I was a little bit older in the dating scene. I think I was in my, I think I was like 26, 27 at the time, which is not that older, that much older in the dating scene, but still.
And so she's like, if we're really going to, you know, say everything that we need to say, I have a daughter.
Well, I mean, at that point in time, I was done with the single scene. Mm-hmm. So we looked at each other and we were like, okay, I'm looking for someone. You're looking for someone. Let's lay it out on the table and figure out if we're compatible.
That's so cool. I love that. And what was like what was your initial gut reaction when you found out she had a daughter?
It was different because at that time I was starting to notice in the singles dating scene that I was starting to encounter more women that did have kids. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time they would almost tell me like it was a secret, because I know for a lot of times for girls or for women that do have kids and stuff like that, that are single moms that are on the dating scene, sometimes that can be a deal breaker. A lot of the times that can be a deal breaker because a lot of guys just aren't ready for it.
Right. So, especially in your 20s. It's like you're kind of starting that, you know, like your mid 20s is when, yeah, people start having kids. So I can see like at that age, like I can see in your 40s by that point, like everybody's got them, you know. So,
yeah. And it was a dynamic that I had already accepted. I was like, OK, I'm getting up there in my 20s and definitely this is going to be part of the scene if I'm dating. Like I'm going to be encountering women, single moms that have kids. It's just a fact of life. And that really didn't bother me. Bothered me is when they would kind of mention it like a secret or like they're almost ashamed of it. Mm. That really bothered me. So when Amanda told me for the first time that she had her daughter, I was like, you know, she had this look of just like love and joy in her eyes. And for me, I was like, wow, I had to meet this little girl.
I can picture her face when she's saying it because she's such a joyful person anyway. So I can like kind of see that, you know, as you're describing it. So
yeah, Amanda smiles with her eyes.
Yeah, she does. She really does. And so how long did you guys wait until you met her?
It was quick. It was quick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one of those things that, I mean, I wasn't her boyfriend at the time or anything like that. I wasn't introduced as such. I was just introduced as kind of like, oh, hey, here's a friend who's coming over. And she introduced me to her mom, her dad. I already knew her brother from high school, but she introduced me to her parents and her daughter all in the same go.
And was it hard to sort of get to know her and her daughter together? Or did you find that it was kind of easier?
I mean, it was nerve-wracking meeting her daughter. That was more nerve-wracking than meeting her parents.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
How so?
Because parents are adults. You know, you're communicating on the same wavelength. We're kids. They just kind of feel. And it's one of those things that when I met her for the first time, she just kind of looked at me and she was a little shy. But she smiled and she kept smiling. She did kind of that nervous giggle smile. And Amanda's dad right away was like, oh, she likes you. She likes you. And I was like, OK, like, I'll take your word for it because I don't really know kids that well. So but it was good. It was one of those things that, you know, the first meeting was great. And we didn't want to introduce me as anything more than, hey, here's Carlo, a guy I know. There's a whole other dynamic and, you know, it wasn't just two people meeting and falling in love, so to speak. There was a whole family dynamic that was going to be affected by anything that happened from that point forward.
And did you have to build a relationship with her as well as your wife?
Absolutely. I mean, at that point in time, they had a custody schedule. So she was going back and forth 1 week with her father and then 1 week with her mother. So in the times that she wasn't with us, then we were like a young couple with like no kids. It's kind of like what it felt like, you know, because we were just out and about. Or it felt like we had a babysitter. Mm-hmm. I guess I can't really say that it ever felt for her like she had no kids. But it's one of those things that we were just out and about, and she would be she would be with her father, and yeah, that type of thing. I remember the first time Gabby and I hung out really by ourselves, and it was an interesting evening. She was about 5 years old, and basically at that time she was not feeling well. She had a cold, So her mom went out to the pharmacy to go get some cold medicine and that type of thing. And I was, you know, left at the apartment, just me and Gabby by ourselves. Gabby came over to me and she just started like climbing on me. She knew that I was kind of grossed out by her sniffles, because every time she would sniffle, I would kind of like curl back like a little bit. So she thought it would be fun to kind of like climb up me and like get in my face and be like, you know, sniffling in my face, like in a playful, teasing type of way. And I really like that. I don't know if it's different for dads and moms, but I know dads sometimes tend to be more the roughhousing, playful, wrestling, that type of thing, at least in our household it is. So I don't know. There's like a little teasing relationship that Gabby and I have with each other that exists to this day, where we just kind of, you know, it's almost like, I'm not her father, and I have a unique relationship with her as her stepfather, but it's almost like this in-between, like, father-brother relationship, like older brother. I think that's the best way I can describe it.
That's interesting. Like, I assume that you still do some of the disciplining and stuff, but do you feel like maybe you have a different angle on, you know, her confidence and your relationship?
Yeah. I mean, I just want to clarify, like, the statement that says, you know, I'm not her father. I know that sounds, like, very kind of direct and abrupt, but she has a father. And I don't want to step on his toes. And as much as, you know, during the very beginning, she called me daddy a couple times. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, no one's ever going to replace your father. And I knew that because I have a father and a stepfather. So, yeah, it was kind of along those lines.
Yeah. And you've been in her shoes. So did you feel like that kind of gave you a sensitivity that maybe other people don't have?
Yeah, I definitely think so. It was one of those things that I remember Amanda was kind of like, at the very beginning, she was kind of like, I'm sorry that you had to put up with this complicated dynamic and all this type of stuff. And I was like, hey, babe, I'm like, I'm the most qualified guy for the job.
That's so true. That's a really interesting point. I love that. I love that. And was she, did her heart melt when you said that?
I don't quite remember. I mean, I think she just felt, she felt grateful.
Right.
She felt thankful that I had that point of view.
And so when you really, you know, as things progressed in your relationship with your wife and you kind of realized, like, this is the woman for me, did it sort of change your perspective on being a parenting team? And like, how did, like, did you tell Gabby, did you ask her before you proposed to her mom? Like, was there anything going on like that as you decided, like, this is my family?
Well, I mean, that's very, it's one of those things that you have to be careful about how much, I think with kids, how much decision making that you give to them. And the idea of me marrying her mother, it wasn't something that I asked her permission, but it was one of those things that I felt like I had been a functioning part of their lives for long enough that it was a natural next step. So I did the traditional thing and I asked her father, Amanda's father, and did that. I felt that was too much to put onto at the time. She was 8 years old at the time. I think that was too much of an unknown to put on a child. And I didn't want to burden her the responsibility of making a decision of that magnitude. So, you know, in that sense, like, I mean, Amanda and I knew that we were going to get married. Like, you know, we were having those bedtime conversations, what if, next steps, you know, we could do this, where would we go, all that type of stuff. And when I did propose to her, I think it was the very next day, I told Gabby, I said, hey, your mom and I are getting married. And, you know, just big hugs. It was great. It was, you know, she had, I think, a lot of things to process in post. But, you know, we helped her with that every step of the way.
Wow. I love that. And so, so you guys, you do marry. And then a few years later, you have another child. And so I,
yeah.
So it's an interesting now dynamic, because she was like 11, right? When your daughter was born, when your second daughter was born, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that was, because she's 13 now and little Sage is 2 years old now. So,
I love that. And so when you told her, like, was she kind of begging for a sibling, or was she, you know, apprehensive? Like, how did she take it?
Well, she was completely grossed out whatever we told her, because I think at the time when she was in school, she was learning about, like, you know, all the functions of how that comes to be. So we actually have it on video at home somewhere. I set up the tripod and videotaped when we revealed to her that we were having a baby, and the reaction is priceless. It's just one of those things where, you know, Amanda pulls out the pregnancy test, Gabby looks at it, and then she's just immediately disgusted.
That's awesome. That is a perfect 11-year-old response.
But, but throughout the pregnancy, she was, you know, I could see her growing closer to her mother throughout the entire process. And then when Sage was born, it was such a tough situation because Gabby had a cold right around the time Sage was born. She had a pretty bad cold. So she couldn't be with us like in the hospital and in the room when the newborn was there. So we literally, you know, I walked out to the lobby with Gabby and she's literally on FaceTime with the rest of the family, that type of thing. And it was just pulling at her heartstrings. You know, she wanted to be there so bad, but she absolutely 100% looks at Sage and treats Sage and like, you know, Sage is not her half sister. Sage is her sister.
I love that. Oh, that's so awesome. And they look like they're so close. And Gabby looks like such a fantastic big sister. Do you feel like she's like blossomed into the best big sister ever?
Yeah, it's been the best. She is. It's funny. Like she gets to see what the other side of parenting looks like. Like the other day she kind of reprimanded Sage in the car seat because she was doing that pelvic thrust thing where she didn't want to get in the car seat. And Gabby, you know, got a little firm with her. And then afterwards she was like, I feel like I'm going to cry because I had to raise my voice at Sage. I was like, yep, that's what it's like sometimes.
Aww. Yeah, right. Strap in. You're going to experience this one day. This is what it is.
Yeah. These are your training wheels, little girl.
Right. And you mentioned a little bit earlier that you aren't Gabby's father and that she does have a father. And I kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about that because I know it wasn't easy, but you guys have a really spectacular co-parenting relationship. And I would love for you to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't always been easy. We went through all the regular stuff that most people with ex-husbands or ex-wives go through. I think at a certain point, I have very little tolerance for consistent negativity. And I get into fight or flight. And when I get into fight or flight, I'm saying, like, I got to fight for peace in this situation because we got to relieve everybody of this constant tension and anxiety. So basically, I called a meeting. And it was kind of funny because I was like the new boyfriend, you know? Mm-hmm. I think Amanda and I had been together for like maybe 8 months, like not even a year. And I was just like, let's get the adults together. Let's all sit down in a public space so that everything stays cool. And let's talk this out. And the first thing I said is, we're all here for Gabby. Like that is the one bond that links the three parents together. And I wasn't even a parent at the time. The two parents and the new boyfriend, which is not an easy role. But it was one of those things where I said, listen, regardless of what we got going on in between the three of us, whether it's arguing or disagreements or how we should handle things, yada, yada, yada. At the end of the day, Gabby's going to be affected by all of this. So all our decisions need to be governed by that. Like that needs to be our compass.
Wow. That's incredibly mature. How did that first response, like how did they take it at very first?
Well, I mean, there was a little resistance. I mean, back in that time, it was kind of like, you know, sometimes people are just fighting just to fight, you know, mm-hmm. You know, I'd say black, he'd say white, she'd say flamingo, he'd say hippopotamus. It doesn't matter. There was no rhyme or reason behind it. It was just like, I just want to, you know, keep this going. And that was, I think all parties were guilty of that. But I think, you know, once we were persistent and pushing things through and making all our conversations, we spoke about our decisions in terms of Gabby's well-being, then we found common ground to start building our relationship.
And was it hard to always have to be the big kid in the situation?
I mean, we had our moments.
Yeah.
But the moments were short-lived. One of the beautiful things about my relationship with Amanda is anytime we do get into a disagreement, we get over it quick, usually by the next morning. There's that whole wedding thing, like, never go to bed angry. And I'm like, yeah, that works if you don't get into a fight before like 10 p.m.
Right.
Sometimes you're going to go to bed angry.
Right. Sometimes you need a night to sleep on it and realize that like, oh, maybe I was being a little bit of a jerk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's one of those things that in the morning, like you still got to give each other a big deep hug and send each other off into like a good day at work.
Right. But now you're kind of going out and having beers with him. Like you guys are kind of friends. I love that. Like, I mean, was it worth it? All of this work? Like, do you feel like now you're in a good place, the three of you?
So incredibly worth it. Like every ounce of energy that we put into building our relationship with Gabby's father has rewarded us tenfold. And it just makes life easier for everybody. Those relationships do require maintenance. And that's one of those things that as a family, I say, you know, me, Amanda, Gabby's father and Gabby and now Sage, like we try to get together at least once a month and share a meal, whether it's at you know, my house or, you know, Ruby Tuesdays or something like that. Just all get together and like, let's all talk about what's going on, because we have common parenting things we need to talk about and be all on the same page with him too. We want to make sure that he's seeing the same things we're seeing, because, you know, at times Gabby's still growing kids, so she's by no means running a perfect race. So it's one of those things that we just need to all get together and have that maintenance for everybody. Sometimes as far as getting together for beers, I mean, it's not like he and I are like running around calling Ubers and painting the town red or anything like that.
Right.
But we're definitely, sometimes if Amanda's schedule doesn't work out and there's things that need to talk about, then he and I will get together and just catch up, which is really nice. I mean, we have like one or two beers and we joke about it because it's guy time, because, you know, we're the only guys in this family dynamic. So,
no, that's,
you know,
true. I didn't even think about that. That's crazy. I didn't even like put that all together, but you're right. You're like the only ones against the three women. That's wild.
So I joke with him and be like, guys night.
All right.
So even the, you know, I have a dog and a cat. They're both girls too. So
that's
the only testosterone in the whole situation.
That's hilarious. And so one of the coolest things I think about you that I love is that you are like the entrepreneur of entrepreneurs. You, I'm serious. Like you went to like school for engineering, right? So it wasn't like what you're doing now wasn't what you thought you'd be doing when you went to college, right?
Yeah. I mean, I went to school for industrial engineering at Virginia Tech. I did it because, I mean, I was a straight A student in high school, which is great. But I think one of the downsides of being a straight A student is it's hard to identify what your passion truly is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and basically I took the safe route. You know, you and I know we come from a very small town. The arts in our small town are not necessarily something that is highly cultivated. It's not necessarily the most fertile soil to be blossoming and a career in the arts. I mean, it's good. It's a good place to start, I think. And, you know, the Garrett County is developing, and if you really want to make it there, you can, especially with the internet. But for me at that point in time, yeah, I mean, it was one of those things when I graduated from high school, I was like, okay, engineering, I got the grades to do it. I got into a good school, and hey, look, starting salary is this. That sounds good. But I mean, you can tell by the tone of my voice, it wasn't like really in my heart to do it.
Right. Because, well, like, when did you pick up your first camera?
Ooh, that would be high school yearbook.
Okay.
With Mr. Matt Wathaw. he's my best buddy in high school, and I used to actually dip out on English class every now and again so I could go hang out in the dark room. He could teach me how to develop film.
Really? I didn't know that. That's pretty rad. So
yeah.
Did you feel like even back then, like, this is something that I could really like sink my teeth into?
Not then. Mm-hmm. I knew I liked taking pictures. I knew I liked capturing moments and things like that. All the technical stuff, I'd just hand the camera to Matt. He'd do all the settings, then he'd hand the camera back to me. I guess I got my first, I've had several kind of special cameras in my life. Whenever I was in college, I took a trip to Singapore to visit with my father, who lives on the other side of the planet. He kind of bounces back and forth between the Indian Ocean and the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And he got me this Ricoh, I think it was the RDC i200. It's like my first digital camera, and it had a Leica lens, and it was about the size of a VHS cassette tape. And
wow.
Yeah. And I felt like, first off, I was removed from the United States, and I was in another country with this camera. So, and we went to the Philippines on that trip too. So I felt like Mr. National Geographic, like touring, you know, East Asia and taking all these cool pictures. So that was really impactful for, you know, I guess my love for photography. And then, gosh, I guess I got my first Canon Rebel for Christmas in 2007, 2008. And that was an interesting experience. Just, it was one of those things that I think most people that buy a nice camera experience is like, I took it out of the box. I knew this thing cost more than $500. And I was like, I'm going to be David LaChapelle as soon as I push the shutter. And the first 30 pictures were just garbage. It was just blurry lines and weird colors. And why is the Christmas tree purple? What the heck is going on? Like, I had no idea.
That's hilarious.
But I had one picture that was good, and I was like, okay, I just got to recreate that. I just got to do that again. You know, basically, I just obsessed over the thing over the next maybe 6 to 8 months, and that kind of accelerated my growth with it.
Wow. And when did you decide, like, this would be something that I want to do for a living?
Oh, man. Okay, so interesting moments happened. You know, sometimes the universe or God or whatever you think is out there speaks to you. So I was at this job. I was in a group sales job at the resort in Deep Creek, and I was not doing well. I was not doing well in that job. And one of my coworkers, who was a new hire with me, she said, if you could do anything you wanted to do, what would it be? I said, I don't know. I guess I'd take pictures. I love taking pictures. Because at the time, I was driving to Morgantown, photographing the music scene out there.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was the first time I ever answered that question. And it kind of flipped a switch in my head. Like, wait, like, that is what you really want to do. And then what else happened after that? Oh, I got laid off from that job. So I'm driving home down 219, wondering what I'm going to do with my life. And I'm driving past the ski shop I used to work at, High Mountain Sports. And I'm driving by, and I had that split moment decision. I said, you know, do I put the blinker on right and turn into the parking lot and ask for my old job back? Or do I keep driving and pursuing photography? And I don't even think it was a conscious decision. I just kept driving.
Wow.
And I think once that store was in my rearview mirror, I was like, okay, here we go. Here we go.
Wow. And so, like, you taught yourself how to take beautiful photos. And then you had to have just taught yourself how to start and grow a business. Like, I know that, like, my husband and I were some of your first clients, right? But I don't think we were your very first, right? Like, did you think, like, weddings? Like, I'm going to start with weddings. Like, where did the wheels turn from there?
I mean, as far as weddings go, I had been shooting a lot of music at the time. I was shooting in Morgantown, West Virginia. There's a really cool club there called 123 Pleasant Street. They had awesome music, just a really original scene. And I wanted to shoot it and document it. So I kind of became the house photographer for that scene down there. And then I eventually got a freelancing job with the Republican newspaper shooting high school sports. And I was like, yeah, I got $20 to get my image published. And that was my goal, was just to be published. Like, that's all that mattered to me. I didn't really care about the money or anything like that. And then we had a family friend that was getting married for the second time. And I was starting to develop a reputation as being like, oh, Carlo's a photographer, as opposed to, oh, Carlo has a nice camera. And so basically, she asked me to shoot her wedding. And I was like, are you sure? Are you sure you want me to shoot your wedding? Because I've never shot a wedding before. And she was like, I'm sure. And then she was like, she asked me to come up with a price. And I was like, I don't know, $400. And she was like, okay. And we shook hands. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I'm shooting a wedding. So I think I had 3 months to the wedding, and I studied my butt off on the internet for nonstop until the wedding day. And I rented like all the best equipment that I could get, and backup cameras and all that type of stuff. And I shot the wedding. It turned out really good. I was really happy with it. Shared it on MySpace. And friends that were getting married started calling me. And I guess people just kind of took notice that, like, hey, like, you did a pretty good job.
Yeah, like, that was, I remember you and I met at, like, the Baltimore Street Grill or something, and you were like, and I remember thinking, like, oh my God, like, his photos are so beautiful. I didn't know Carlo was a photographer. You know what I mean? It was like one of those things where it just, like, starts tumbling. And then, I'm, like, sitting here as we do this interview, and I'm looking up at the wall at my wedding photos, and I still, it's unbelievable to me that you were just beginning then, because I look at them and I'm like, God, I love them so much. They're so beautiful. They're all so perfect. And I love, you know, and so your photography, because I've known you for so long, and like, I've also been in 100 weddings that you've taken photos for. So like, it has gotten so good, but even at the beginning you were so good. So that's awesome. But it also must have been really hard to like grind out your own business. Was it as hard as like people imagine?
It is hard. It is very hard. And you can't do it without support. There are many a times when I was first living in Lancaster and Amanda and I moved in together, where she was buying the groceries and I was just dragging my feet, just like moping, like, I can't believe I can't contribute to the groceries right now. Because that's the thing, is when you start out, I think I was working 3 or 4 jobs when I first moved to Lancaster, but I made sure that they're all related to photography and all related to creativity, so that it was a win-win situation. I didn't want to go back to working at a grocery store or working at a coffee shop or anything like that, because, you know, if that's just a job to pay the bills, and it's taking time away from whatever you're trying to build in the first place.
Right. Right.
So I didn't want the two to be mutually exclusive. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a roller coaster. Amanda's been with me throughout the entire process. Family's been with me throughout the entire process. All the traveling that I've done, all the seasonality of the business, like they've stuck with me.
Wow. And so it kind of makes like your big news even sweeter, right? You have like major news, right?
Yes. So 2 days ago, I accepted a position with Fig Industries as their head photographer. But yeah, it raises a lot of questions.
So yeah. So first of all, like, congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you.
But second, like, does that mean that you're finished with your own business, or like how, like, what are you thinking now?
It's a very careful, I'm very carefully curating my plate and what's on it. Mm-hmm. So that being said, I have obviously weddings contracted for the rest of the year, and I am committed to fulfilling those weddings for 2017. And my new boss knows that I'm committed to fulfilling those weddings for 2017. And then in regards to 2018, I think I'm going to dial the weddings back, maybe do 8-10 weddings a year, try to keep them as close to Lancaster, Central PA as possible, maybe Philadelphia, Baltimore, or something like that. But, you know, it's all for, you know, stability, and also I want to see my family on the weekends. That's a big part of it.
So that was my next question. Was this a decision based on family?
It was 100% based on family. Mm-hmm. I mean, that being said, it's one of those things that there's a seasonality to this business that is, there's no real way to describe it. I mean, wedding season runs May through September, October. So wintertime, you got to really rely on your bookings for the following year, or you have to come up with other ways to bring in income. And, you know, me as an individual, I have no problem tightening my belt and eating bologna sandwiches for a month, but I'm not going to commit my family to doing that. So it's one of those things that, you know, Amanda and I looked at each other and said, hey, you know, we got to, there's that whole financial conversation, make more, spend less, or do both.
Is it bittersweet?
It is slightly, it is, bittersweet's the word. Bittersweet is the word.
Because you're a self-made man. I mean, like, you, out of every person I know, you are the self-made man. And I mean, seriously, like I don't know anybody else who launched a successful business based on, you know, an interest that they took up with no formal education in either business or photography. I mean, seriously. And you were good at both.
Well, I'm not a self-made man. I'm a self-made photographer. Mm-hmm. When it comes to being a self-made man, I mean, I don't think there's very few men that are islands, I guess you could say, but I could not do it without the support of my family. I mean, both my parents are, you know, successful business people, so they've lent me advice over and over and over again. You know, anytime I'm running my business, it's not uncommon for us to sit at the dinner table and I'll bring them my accounting numbers. And then as far as my father goes, you know, he was there when my lens broke. And I didn't have a lens, and I didn't have the money to buy a lens, you know? And I said, hey, Dad, can I borrow some money to buy this lens? And he said, absolutely, because he knew that, like, I couldn't do what I love without it. And it's one of those things that, you know, I'd be like, Dad, I'll pay you back. He's like, don't pay me back. He's like, this is one of those things that I'm, like, gifting to you because I see that you love it and that it's, you know, it's important to your sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's the support is tremendous. I mean, I can only imagine what it's like if you were an individual without family or friends or resources or anything like that to go off and just build an empire. I mean, I'm sure people have done it, but those people, they, you know, write movies about.
But still, I mean, yes.
But still,
I hear you and I agree with you, but I still think that like your sweat, grit, determination is like above all what got you into like you are now known amongst everybody I know as the photographer, you know? So like, yes, like I know, I get it. And like, I understand that like your family has helped and everything, but you just need to take credit where credit is due.
I'll take some of it.
Right,
I got a good eye.
Okay.
What can I say? I got a good eye.
That's true. So when you like, you hear you get the job, and then like, what do you tell your wife and daughter? And then daughter, one can talk and one is still working on it. But so like, what did everybody say? Are they super excited?
Yeah, everyone was rooting for me 100% of the time. There are 210 applicants for the position and I got it. So it went from 210 down to 6, down to 3, down to 2, and then I walked away with the position. And you know, a little bit about Fig Industries, they're basically a central PA regional publication. They also have publication in Columbia, South Carolina. So and the level of art and photography and design that's in this magazine is, I mean, it's there, it's it. So it's one of those things that I remember when I first moved to Lancaster, I picked up Fig magazine and I was like, holy moly, like this is, it was just inspiring to see. So, you know, based on that, I mean, that's just a little bit about the company, but it's, well, it's crazy because like, it's like a job, like a real job.
Right.
Like a salary and like benefits and like vacation days and there's some travel involved and all that type of stuff. So,
and like, you don't have to worry about like invoicing and like bill, you know, bill collecting and all that's like, all that is kind of getting off your plate now. Is that kind of relaxing?
Well, I accepted the job 2 days ago. I'm supposed to start on Monday. I've been in the office every day preparing because Monday, I guess the you know, right now they're getting into their heavy shooting season. So they run on kind of like a 4 to 6 week shooting cycle 4 times a year because it's a quarterly publication. So, and I'm responsible for the photography in all the locations, which is about 5. It's going to be Lancaster, Bethlehem, Kennett Square, Columbia, South Carolina, and Westchester. So wow. I'm the guy that's running around doing all that stuff. So, you know, in addition to like meeting my team and being processed through HR, I'm also being like, show me what equipment you have so I can make sure that it marries well with my equipment. You know, you start a job and it's like, what's my email address now?
How do I get into the building?
Yeah. What's the Wi-Fi password?
Right. This is like a big kid job. Like, this is like a grown-up job. Like, that's crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm super stoked about it. I'm really excited about it.
Will you come back like in like a year and talk to us and like give us an update and tell us how it's going?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome. And, you know, that's, and I'm not quitting weddings 100%. I mean, I've worked that out with the boss and everything like that. You know, I'm committed to my 2017 couples. And then, you know, we'll take a handful of couples every year from here on out.
That's awesome. You deserve all of the goodness coming at you because you worked really, really hard and you're a spectacular person. And I just like, your story is incredible. And I love that you shared it with us. And I really appreciate you doing it. Thank you so much, Carlo.
You're welcome. I love you, Bridget. You're awesome.
I love you. Thank you. So since it's been a little while since we recorded this interview, I thought I would just check back in with Carlo and see how the job was going, because as we recorded this, you know, he hadn't really started. So he said, hey, Bridget, I just wanted to reach out and let you know how the job's going. 3 words: intense, spontaneous, and fun. All my faves. He said, it's an incredibly creative environment and I'm shooting anywhere between 6 and 8 shoots a day, everything from local community leaders to food to dogs on Vespas. And he says in parentheses, not kidding. He said, I admit I was nervous to start and experiencing an array of emotions, but I'm 100% happy with this decision and its transgression. Anyway, thanks for having me on your podcast, and I hope at least a few people were able to get something out of it. So way to go, Carlo. I'm super impressed, and I'm super happy about your transition. So if you want to find Fig Industries, it's www.figindustries.com. And if you want to find Carlo and see all of his incredible work, please go to Instagram. It's @Carlo_photo_commercial. And his website is www.carlophoto.com. I continue to just be so impressed with his work and his work ethic. And so I just really appreciate him being on the show. Thank you so much, Carlo. And thank you so much for listening. And if you have a really phenomenal story or a point of view or anything that you'd like to talk about in regards to parenting or being a parent or kids or anything, please let me know. I would love to interview you. You can find me on Facebook at Birds in a Tree Radio. You can also find me on Twitter at Birds Radio, and you can email me at birdsinatree@outlook.com. Once again, thank you so much to my beautiful husband, Court, for all that you do. And until next time, I'm Bridget Manley, and this is Birds in a Tree.